morning, everyone, and welcome once again to our weekly Sunrise Project call, where we are always here with love and compassion and our desire to heal ourselves and our families. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. This morning, I'm so excited to have with us a very special guest. I've known her entire life, I believe. Lexi Hopkins Cunningham is a graduate of Yale College and Yale School of Public Health, where she received her BA and MPH, respectively. She is a suicidologist, which I am just grateful for you and in awe of you. Her research analyzes the history of suicide in Black communities, and she uses that lens to understand the current crisis of death by suicide among Black youth. In addition to her research, Lexi is an expert in health equity and wellness. And in 2020, after seeing how COVID-19 illuminated health disparities in Black communities, she founded LRH Wellness, a virtual wellness center that uses community-based programs and social media to help Black communities live healthy lives. So Lexi, I am so excited to see your beautiful face this morning, right on the eve of your birthday. And I'm grateful for you getting up and being here early this morning. So welcome, it's good to see you.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm always so grateful to join the Sunrise community. And so I'm just happy to be here to talk about something so important, even though it's not always the most chipper thing to talk about on a Sunday morning, but it's good right. We have these conversations.
Yes, not always chipper, not chipper at all, but really important and critically important, particularly now, given the rates of death by suicide and the particularly among people of color and mm-hmm. Black men and young people, age 15 yeah. to 24. And many of us on this call have young people in that age range and mm-hmm. Need to know, you know, want to know and need to know what kinds of things we can do, you know, with our young people. And so I want to open up the conversation by asking you, why is it so important for parents to have open conversations about suicide with our children? And how do we do that? How do we open up the space for a conversation?
Yeah, so I think suicide is like an uncomfortable topic of conversation, yes. right? People don't know how to talk about it. People don't want to talk about it. Even in healthcare systems, you know, the experts have trouble talking about suicide. Physicians, emergency room doctors, like that's just the reality. So I think like level setting that it is difficult and it is not easy is like the first thing we all have to do of like, these are going to be hard conversations, even if we're trying our very best to be casual and to introduce it in a non-intimidating way, it's difficult. It's so important for Black families to have conversation with their children about suicide because we're not perceived in the narrative of suicide. So when our kids are looking at media around suicide, when they're seeing things on social media, when the conversations being had around suicide are happening, they don't see themselves. And so what happens is that leads to this dismissal of feelings and the minimization of real feelings that are likely suicidal. So when we think of suicidality, you know, we think of thoughts. So that can be anything from passive suicidal ideation of just, what if I just didn't wake up? Would anybody notice? I wish I could just sleep forever, right? Or all the way to active thoughts of like making a plan, you know, envisioning their death, and then behavior. So that can look anything from some form of self-harm, whether that be skin picking, hair pulling, all the way to like cutting and things like that. So suicidality exists on a spectrum. And when we don't talk about...
Can I ask a question about the...
Yes, please.
The suicidality exists on a spectrum, and you mentioned cutting. And mm-hmm. are you saying that cutting is past that, is that third phase, past the passive and active thoughts? The cutting would be in that third phase?
I wouldn't think of it necessarily as like a third phase, but what you can have with suicidality is you can have thoughts, you can have behaviors, thoughts, like you can divide it into like kind of thoughts and then behaviors. And there's sometimes it's almost like a Venn diagram, right? So some people will just have suicidal thoughts and never act on behaviors unless they have an action plan and attempt to die by suicide. Then you can have people who have behaviors but would never identify the active thoughts in their head that match those behaviors. And that's kind of what I'm describing.
I get it. Thank you.
Yeah, and so it's not necessarily that, it's a clear line of progression, right? Like it's not like a A to Z. When you get to Z, this is what happens. But there's a spectrum of behaviors. And what's important to know about that spectrum is because, it might not look like what kids see on the media. It might not look like what we think of when we think of suicidality, when we think of suicidal behaviors. We often think, just like culturally, people think of either veterans, white male veterans, or they think of teenage white female girls. And that's just like not our kids, right? That's not Black kids. And so it's really important to have these conversations because your children might not even recognize that they're on this kind of trajectory. They probably don't have the language, or they don't have the outlets. They don't have kind of the coping skills for these really big emotions. So just by introducing the topic and having an open conversation really allows them to see the reality of their situation and not dismiss it. Because what we know is when kids are dismissing their feelings around suicidality, it escalates. They hide it, they hide it, they hide it, they stuff it down. It's hidden from their parents. And then it comes out in crisis, or it's something that tracks with them the rest of their life. And it might be a crisis as an adult. So that's why it's like very important.
That's what, but how, and I guess the how of that, how do you open up a conversation around this topic, which may have, in my case, there was an attempt a couple of times in my household, thus the why Sunrise was born originally 5 years ago, or it could be sign other signs happening, and the person has stuffed it down and won't talk, and it might be a person that just won't talk at all. They go in their room and they close the door. So how, wow. As a caring parent, we all love our children and want them to be well. How do we open up that space for communication if they shut down?
So I think there's like a few ways to do this, right? And it definitely depends on the age, the personality of your child, right? So I think having a very clear state, like understanding of like as clear as you can, kind of doing like the pre-work, like of understanding where your kid is. So if you have this perception that like your kid is actively suicidal, you feel like you know this, that's going to look like a very different conversation than just educating your child that this is feelings that somebody might have, right? So if you feel like you're kind of creeping into that, like I'm noticing signs of depression, anxiety, self-harming, I'm no noticing language and disinterest and all of those different things, I think the first thing to be is direct. Be very direct. I've noticed this in you, and maybe and put some of the onus on yourself. It is nobody's fault that somebody else is suicidal. So let's like be very clear about that. Like it's so easy, I'm sure, as parents to blame yourself, to think of all the things you didn't do, but that's not your fault. That's not how this works, right? And that self-blame and perception that you messed up is a reason why children, Black children often do not tell their parents they're suicidal because they don't want their parents to feel burdened or it's their fault. So my research has pulled out a lot of those themes of like why Black children don't seek help, and that's a huge one. They don't want to be a burden to their parents. They perceive that, if their parents will think it's their fault, it will add something else to their parents' plate. So they want to protect their parents. So it is no one's fault, but recognize with your child, be like, I think I might have missed some signs, and I'm noticing these things now.
I love that.
And if your kid might be like, I don't want to talk to you about this. You're wrong. You're wrong. You're like, okay, but I want you just to listen to me, hear me out on this, and then come back. Think about it for 24 hours and come back to me. because we're not going to stop having this conversation. I think that's an important thing. You keep going back. You don't let up. This is like critical. You keep showing up. You don't let back. You don't let up. You keep going at it with gentleness, kindness, non-judgmental attitude. And you can very much bring that, like, I've seen these things and these are my concerns. I want you to be able to talk to me. You might not be able to. So what can we do to communicate better? And so for older ch children, you know, it might be really great to just do letters back and forth to start. Sometimes it's really uncomfortable to like say these words to talk in person, but what if you could do a letter system, something like that?
And
What if you
start by writing a letter and letter to the person, to the child or the young
Yeah.
adult. That's interesting. The question is, would they write back? You know, I'm not normally a negative Nelly, but I'm just thinking about
No.
reality of somebody that may have completely just shut down because you see them as, you know, you can see they're depressed
Yeah.
or and you've never talked about it. I love what you just mentioned about, I didn't notice these, or we didn't talk about this
Yeah.
previously. And I even think adding, you know, and I'm sorry about that. Like, I'm sorry I didn't model how to communicate with you, you know, because that's,
Completely.
I think, true for so many of us. So we didn't, well, I'll speak for myself, didn't model communication in my household with how to really communicate with people. When you see major signs or issues, people really just swept it under the rug and tried
Yeah.
not to, try to pretend it wasn't there.
I
So
think
acknowledging that, I heard you say, I think is important also.
I definitely agree with that. The acknowledgement goes such a long way. And I think, you know, you start the conversation like as a conversation, and you tell them like, I want you to have the space to talk to me, however that looks. And you know, hopefully, like in a perfect world, right, they'll open up and they'll pour everything out, and then you can go into all the planning and safety planning, right? Like, but realistically, you probably won't get a response. And that's okay. I think the persistence and the showing up again and again and again with kindness and being non-judgmental, that's a key. The non-judgmental and being able to be level-headed is very, very important. It is so easy to escalate and to hit major crisis mode. That is scary for kids. You have to think like people's perception, right? They're like, if I tell my parents this, they're gonna lock me up. They're gonna put me in, you
Send me
know, a
away.
psych ward. They're gonna send me away. You know, I'm gonna miss school. I'm gonna miss my friends, the things that are important to me. I'm gonna miss out on. So staying as level-headed as possible is also really important. Now, if you are in crisis, if you know your child, like there's certain questions you should ask, and I can go into that in a second. But you know, if your child says that they have a plan, they have a means, and they have, you know, everything laid out, that's crisis, and that's when you start thinking about, okay, we need to go maybe to an inpatient. We need to call 899. That's the like emergency hotline
Nine
number.
eight 988.
988. Thank
No
you.
problem.
And so those are the types of things you can think about. And also using resources like 988 are really great. So you never know the resources in your location. So I'll give an example. I know in Minnesota, if you call 988 and you need like a stabilization team, they will send people out to your house and they will help you know, figure out the exact people you need, what you need to do for the next 72 hours until you can get the help you need, right? The professional help you need. It can often scare people to call 988, but it's a resource for you, right? It doesn't mean you're committing to anything. You can just learn about the resources in your area. I have a friend whose in-laws, unfortunately, her father-in-law died by suicide in Colorado. And when they called 988, they found the service that pretty much like immediately set their her mother-in-law and brother-in-law up with like hotel to stay in with like a therapist to be with her for pretty much 24 hours. Then they like cleaned the house completely, replaced all the rugs, right? Like they flipped the house back so they could go back to living in their home when they were ready. And those are types of resources you would never know about unless you call, right? And so that's obviously a very extreme situation, but my point is do your homework first. So Know the resources available to you. Try and suss out exactly kind of where you think your child is, in their kind of crisis escalation. So if you're feeling like, this is like emergent, we need help, that's a very different conversation than like, I'm noticing these behaviors and this is scary, but it's not crisis level. Excuse me. I'm so sorry.
Bless you. No problem at
Thank
all.
you. But so I think that's the first thing of like, just like understanding where they are, knowing your resources, and then approaching the conversation. And when you approach that conversation, start from the I perspective. I have noticed this. Would you like to talk to me about this? And if the answer is yes, great. Then you can dive in and you listen. You start by listening. If the answer is no, then you talk and you say, okay, I understand you might not want to talk, but I'm going to keep talking to you about this because I care. And I'm not judging you. I'm not judging you, but I want to make sure you're safe, that you can envision your future, that you can live a long life, right? And showing up again and again with those conversations, don't drop it. That's, I think, the thing, the tendency we have in Black communities and families, like, oh, they'll speak up if they need to, I did the hard part. I did the hard thing. I brought it up. Nobody said anything, so let's drop it. No, you've got to keep going. And I think there's also this perception that if we talk about suicide, it makes people want to die by suicide. But that is not what happens. That is not what the research says. That is not how the behavior escalates at all. It's actually the reverse. When you give people the space to talk about their suicidality, when you give them the opportunity to share, we see a decrease in suicidal ideations, feelings, and kind of what they would rank on like a scale. So it's important to have those conversations. It doesn't push action, but it also gives you an awareness of what's going on. If you're noticing, for example, that like medicine's missing in your cabinets and you know your child's suicidal, that's a very different thing to do to know than if you didn't know your child was suicidal and medicine's missing. You'd probably think, oh, I just misplaced it, or oh, we ran out so fast, right? But it makes you more aware and like to notice the details in your house.
That's right. That's so true. And I wanted to ask, what are the thousand questions? But this next one is, what are some of the warning signs you might see? Like one you just mentioned, medication running out or being empty, and you're like, I thought I had that, but it's not here. What are some other warning signs we might look for?
So I would say a sustained lack of interest, right? So kids are finicky, right? They might love soccer one day, hate it the next. That's normal. Kids are finding out what they do. But a sustained lack of interest, especially in things they did enjoy, that would be one thing. That's like something that seems very small that is often missed, but I would say that's actually a really big sign. Excessive sleep is a little difficult with kids because they're growing, they're evolving. But fascination with death, that's a little bit of a sign, especially for older kids. Younger kids, not as much, because they're learning. But older kids, a new fascination with death, anything that's like new in that. I would also say increased agitation from their normal state. So especially with teenagers, right? They can be finicky, but if you're noticing an increase in agitation for prolonged periods of time, that would be a sign. If they're isolated, if they're used to be very social kids, and are all of a sudden not interested in doing things with their friends, then that could be another sign. Eating changes, so whether they're all of a sudden, eating nothing at all or eating a ton, then that's something to keep a note of. And obviously it's hard, like when people are going through developmental changes, there's also like they're feeling their bodies, there's all these different things. But think of it as like multiple signs on top of each other. So these things kind of stack. Then of course, like if you notice any sort of like medications disappearing in your household, if you're noticing like sharp objects are disappearing, and this doesn't mean there's levels, right? Like, so that doesn't mean you should tear your kid's room apart and necessarily search for everything, right? Because that breaks trust. But starting to like keep track of these things is what you can start with first, and then opening the conversation of like, I have noticed that these medications are all gone. I've noticed that you have no interest in hanging out with your soccer team anymore. Like, what's going on? I'm not accusing you of anything. I just want to hear what's happening. And you might get a, oh, you're being so dramatic. Like, I was just busy last week. I had so much homework. I didn't want to hang out with them. And it's like, okay, well, how about we do something this weekend? How about you invite your team over this weekend? Or, how about I take them to the movies? And there's the no again. You can try again, and you just keep trying. So those are some signs I would say to keep an eye out for. And it's really it won't be just one thing. And then of course, if they say things like, oh, I wish I could just sleep forever. I wonder if I didn't wake up. Like, do you think people would miss me if I was gone? Statements around worthlessness or not deserving. Those types of comments also that don't directly mention like suicide or death can also be kind of like warning signs in your head.
Those are all fantastic. And you're right, I think certain things are tricky, especially with teenagers and young adults around the sleep piece. But those are super, super helpful. I appreciate that. It looks like somebody's come off of mute. So if there's anyone that wants to ask a question, feel free to hop into the conversation. Or if you want to put something in the chat, feel free to do that as well. But this is a really timely and critically important conversation, particularly with our young people, where the rates of death by suicide have grown exponentially, particularly for people of color and LGBTQ people and multicultural people. The rates are just exponentially growing. And so I do, is there somebody that wanted to ask a question? I see two people off of mute. No? Okay. Well, we will just keep chatting.
I have a
One person.
question.
Oh, please, yes.
Yes. My son, he's a young adult. He lives out of state and has been suicidal many times. And being out of state, any recommendations on how to talk to him when he is in that space? He does live with a girlfriend who knows to kind of take all the dangerous things away, but it could happen at any time and she could not be there. Any suggestions? Because he's very afraid of going to a hospital because he's had bad experiences. This was, 5, 7 years ago.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And that's such a wonderful question. And I'm sorry you're dealing with that and that your son's feeling that way. I think it's wonderful that he has a support system where he is, right? That knows what he's going through, that can be there and support him. The first thing that everybody should do is a safety plan. I'll drop Wellness and Colors newsletter in the chat and then our website. And on our website, we have a safety planning document. And so the safety planning document is a wonderful tool just to outline everything that like you would go through in terms of thoughts. So it asks like, what are warning signs for you? It asks safe people you can go to. It has you list phone numbers. It asks if you have a plan. The first thing you should always be doing is knowing if the person who is suicidal has like a plan to die by suicide. Like, do they have a plan that they've thought of, and do they have the means for that plan? That's like your biggest warning sign. If you're like in that zone and in that space, then we know it's like kind of crisis, and that's when you need to start thinking of like professional help. There is a huge fear of being impatient. Impatient isn't always necessary, but it is definitely necessary sometimes. So I'm not going to say that impatient is bad because impatient is a safe space where somebody can be literally physically held in safety while the extreme parts of the crisis pass by. But then there's all the kind of trickle effects and the fear later down the road. So I would start by like making sure that you guys have a safety plan as a family. So between you, your son, and his girlfriend, like have that safety plan mapped out. And then from there, You follow the safety plan. You come to these kind of agreements of like, if this, then this. And like, when somebody is suicidal and they're asking for help and they are willing to talk about it, that is an incredible gift. And treat that like a gift. So thank them for letting you be a part of that
Absolutely.
process and plan, because
Thank
that
you.
means that they're opening up the windows for you to help them. And take that with honor and seriousness. And so I think that if you use kind of a safety planning resource, and then from there have like a, these are what we will do if, like, if this, then this type of situations can be really supportive. And then you being out of state, it's scary for you. So making sure that you have your own support system is going to be very important as well. Whether that's professional, whether that's girlfriends you can talk to, setting up, just like telling your son, like, it's important for me that we talk. We have our 30-minute mother-son call on Tuesdays, whatever it might be, right? And just like setting that, like that's an expectation that you have that will fill your cup up, where you can just be together in community, I think will be really strong, and having those consistent touch points as much as you can being out of state.
It's really helpful.
Thank you. That was incredibly helpful.
Okay, I'm glad.
This is Andre. I had another question. So I know you were talking about older kids. So my son is 12, and I've noticed signs of depression, and he's even posted twice. That he was thinking about committing suicide, since my father passed away, and I know that he's been struggling. So what suggestions do you have for someone that's his age?
Yes.
I also want to say thank you so much because you just freed me because I have been dealing with such tremendous guilt around that, not
Yes.
seeing the signs, and a parent actually reached out to me and told me that their son had saw that he posted something, so and I was so unaware, and I had been beating myself up. So thank you so much for just you saying that part.
Of course, of course. And I really do reiterate it. It is not your fault. I mean, it sounds like your family's going through a lot, right? Like your father died as well. You're in your own grief journey. Like we can't be attuned to everything. And that's why it's important we have the communities around us. And I think as Black families too, I remember thinking about my mom always being like, I never want to hear it from somebody else. It's a gift to be able to hear it from somebody else, because if you didn't hear it from somebody else, you probably wouldn't have known. So I think, being okay with our flaws and our business being out there is something we all as like Black families have to work on a little bit, and not trying to be the perfect family, the together family, but represent for the race, right? Like I think it's okay and so important that we just acknowledge, like, gosh, I am lucky that this lady over here saw this and can bring it to me. Because there's so many people who don't have that, or would tell that lady to go away and ignore her. And then you're still in crisis. So I want us to acknowledge that first. And I'd also like to point out, what we're seeing in Black children is actually the highest rates of suicide are between the ages of 4 and 12. That is where the majority of, sorry if you're hearing my dogs, that is where the majority of kids who are dying by suicide age. One second. Sorry, my dog's,
No
she's a little doodle
problem.
and thinks she's a guard dog.
Yes.
But so that's actually the highest risk age right now in Black youth, is the 4 to 12 range. Anything below 4, we don't categorize as suicide. It's normally accidental death. But so it's actually not abnormal to see suicidal ideations and behaviors in children that young. And I think that's important because we don't think of that. We don't think of young kids as falling into that kind of situation. And we really think more of the older adults. When your child is expressing their suicidality and they're younger, they might, 12's a little older, so he might actually have like more of an idea of like what he's talking about. But I would just start it with like, it sounds like you're having a lot of really big emotions, and it makes sense. And I would be vulnerable with your grieving process too. I'd be really vulnerable with your grieving process and anytime you've struggled. And not to like put it to one-to-one, because they don't want to be like, oh, you're trying to take the thunder, right? Because that's a thought process kids will have. But instead just be like, this is a really hard time for me too. And I would love if you could share with me when you're struggling, because that makes me feel closer to you. And I know grandpa would want me to be there for you. I think language like that and like framing it in that this is a really stressful time can be really beneficial. When there's grief involved, grief is such a long process, right? And it looks different for everybody. And, you know, I think as adults, we've all experienced grief in some format, whether it be loss of an opportunity to death in a family. So I think making sure that, you know, you frame grief as a process that you guys can go through together will be something really, really powerful. And, you know, then again, having that really frank conversation of like, you know, this came to my attention. And I know you probably have a lot of really big emotions, but what's making you feel that way? And don't ask like a what can I do? Because oftentimes kids are not going to know what you can do. They're going to think the only thing you can do is like
Yeah,
lock them up somewhere or
that's
make them
right.
sit through hours and hours of counseling, and they don't think that will help. And we know counseling does help, right? We do, but that might be a process you have to ease somebody into. And even then, like it takes time to find the right counselor, takes time to find the right person that they'll talk to. They might open up more to a mentor than they would a counselor. And so recognizing that asking like what can you do is not a great question because they often won't know. Think about like when you need help yourself and you're kind of in stress mode. Sometimes somebody asking what they can do for you is just like another thing to stress about, right? So
Right.
instead, being very open and saying, like, I'm struggling with this grief too. I've had hard times in my life. I noticed that, you know, you've been showing up this way or you posted this, and I'm really sorry you're feeling that way. How are you feeling? What does that feel like for you?
Right.
So starting from that perspective can be really, really powerful, I think, and can really help you guys together get through this grieving process. And even when your child's not dealing with grief per se, we can all think of suicidality as like some form of grief. And it's a process, it doesn't stop overnight, it takes time. And oftentimes, you know, youth who are suicidal will struggle with suicidality the rest of their life, which I don't say to scare anybody, but I say to encourage you to help them establish the coping mechanisms that work for them early on. And so that might be, you know, having really good conversations around, you know, what it is they love, what helps them get out of their head. It might be exercise, it might be playing video games, it might be reading a book, it might be journaling, right? And then helping them learn how to adapt over time. Your coping skills will change as you get older, right? They will change, they will evolve, they should as the individual evolves. And being kind of that ping pong partner in that growth and development. So as a young kid, it might look like, oh, I just need to kind of rage to some music, right? And then it might go to, I want to take a walk around the block by myself. And, you know, you have to like teach those safe habits and teach kids how to
Yes.
recognize what helps them regulate, what helps them de-escalate their emotions and brings them back to a level where they can either have a conversation or they can continue with their day. So those are some of the tips I would give. And I think starting young is really great and making sure that, you know, you're being vulnerable too, because kids see their adults in their life as, you know, infallible, as either they have no problems at all or they have too many problems, so I can't burden them. And so being able to be that safe middle place of like, I have struggles too, but also I'm the adult here and I'm here to help you. Let's start by doing this. And being very decisive and clear and see if it works. And if it doesn't, that's okay. We'll try something else. You know, it can be really powerful.
Yes, the key word about
Thank you so
vulnerability.
much.
Oh,
Of
yes.
course.
Thank you for asking the question too and for sharing. And we'll pray for your baby, for your 12-year-old,
Thank
and have
you.
faith that he'll be okay. I wanted to go back to something you said earlier, Lexi, about the thoughts to the action. How often do people, if they're starting to have the thoughts, do they take the action?
So there's not clear statistics on that. It depends. It depends. So there are people who will, suicidality is so subjective as a metric and as we measure it in research. So the Like, for example, there are people whose level five of suicidality is somebody else's 9 or 10, right? So it's a little like difficult to measure like thoughts to actions, that kind of trajectory, but it's more so we know what types of thoughts escalate more quickly. So, like I said, if passive thoughts of like, oh, I don't want to be here, I wish I never, I want to sleep forever, that type of thought has a slower kind of progression, if at all, to behaviors and thoughts. A lot of people will just stay there for a while and it'll stop, or it'll stay like that for the rest of their life. Then there are people who every day think about a plan, means, what they would do, and never progress to an attempt. But that's they're like at a 9 every single day, and for many it would raise crisis bells, but that's just their reality. So it's not necessarily, I think, what we should be concerned about is the like almost like conversion rate, but instead this idea of like if there's a change. So that's what's most concerning and to look out for. So if you have somebody who talks about like, oh, I just wish I could nap forever, I feel like that's like the most common thing you'll hear. I wish I just didn't have to wake up, or what if I wasn't here? And then all of a sudden they're saying, I wonder what it would feel like to die. I wonder, I feel like you would have less stress without me here. Like when you see those patterns of escalations, that's when it starts to get more concerning. And then, of course, if somebody has the means, has a plan and the means to enact their plan, that is extremely concerning. And you should be asking those questions. Like, I noticed that you said, like, you wish you could nap forever. Have you ever thought about dying? Like, be direct. Have you ever thought about how you would want to die? Do you have the means? Do you have the, you mentioned you would want to just take pills. Do you have pills to do that? And then make a deal. If you ever have the feeling like you want to take pills to die, or you want to die, will you tell me? Can you promise to tell me any time of the day, night, where I am, whatever it is, can you tell me? So that's the key. And if somebody does have like a plan and the means, that's when you kind of enter crisis mode. You try and remove the means first and foremost, and then that's when you tap into professional help using your 988 network, like calling and seeing what they have available, because their first step might not be inpatient. And I'm not, it depends. Like, use the resources available to you, and they will tell you what's best in your neighborhood. Oftentimes, they'll want you just to do a 24-hour watch on the person to start with. It can be extremely traumatic to be like, go to the ED, go to the emergency room, sit there, and then be held on white papers for 72 hours for kids. Like, that can be a very traumatic experience. And sometimes it's a necessary experience. That is an option for a reason. But I think starting with that 988 helps you make sure that you have the appropriate level of escalation, for
That's
the
right.
situation at hand.
I think the 988 resource is invaluable and I agree
Yes.
completely on the hospital as a last resort. I agree with you wholeheartedly, but I also love how you're giving such clear examples of how to communicate. That is
Yes.
invaluable. So thank you.
Of course. I'm glad it's helpful. My whole practice of research is really, taking these theories and making them as practical and tangible as possible. I think there's a tendency in academia and research and all that stuff to just be very like in your head and, oh, very hypothetical and theoretical. But I want our community to be able to take the research and put it in action immediately in your day-to-day life. And so I appreciate you saying that. Thank you.
The directness and the questions and not overreacting is
Yes.
also really important. If a child does say, if you ask directly about, I noticed you have scars on your arm, have you cut yourself? And being calm, and if they respond with a yes, that can be really difficult for the parent to not overreact, but it's so critical. That's what you're saying, is just stay calm and create a space for conversation about
Yeah.
it. Critical. So thank you. I want to make sure we have time for other questions and shares. If anybody else wants to ask Lexi a question, or if you may be going through something that you need some help with, feel free to come off of mute.
Hi, Kelly. This is Linda McGee. How are you?
Good. Hello.
We're actually together, so that's kind of a faux front. But hi, Lexi. Good morning.
Good
Thank you so much
morning.
for being here. I had a question about the issue of some of the research that are coming out about minority youth that they might face increased risk of suicide because of personal inner disputes and relational cutoffs. And I don't know if you are familiar with that or if you've seen it. I think it's coming out of NYU. And what your thoughts are about that.
Yeah, so I don't think I've read the most recent paper, but I know what you're talking about in general. So what we know about suicidality and Black youth is that on top of all of the reasons that an individual might feel suicidal, right? So if you just like a general population, poverty, discord at home, interpersonal conflict, bullying, gender identity, all of those things, right? Development, all of those different things are reasons in which children might experience suicidality, and adults too. What we notice with Black youth are those like social determinants of health and racism are heightened and driving even increased suicidality. So racial identity and racism is a very big driver of suicidality in Black youth. And so my research looks at this a little bit too, is what we know is that Black youth are very aware of the fact that they are Black in a white America. They are very aware of racism, discrimination, the discrimination their parents face. Whether they have experienced discrimination or not, they are very in tune to the discrimination that their parents experience, even if they don't necessarily have the language for it. So they understand their positionality as a Black individual in the US and the world pretty well, in a way that most people don't actually understand or realize. And we know that that burden of racism is something that has poor health effects on all people of color, and so adults or children. And so what we see with Black youth is that they don't not only do they not have the language to really understand these very big social structures and these big social entities, right, and systems of discrimination, but they have the very astute perception of what's going on. And so we know that that reality is kind of one component that's particularly affecting Black youth. With that, I think it's really important to have conversations around racial pride, around Black history, right? I think Black History Month can become almost like a, oh, we just do this thing in February, right? Black history is everybody's history. But there's a lot of power in showing youth and showing people like what it means to be Black and the incredible things that Black people do, because they're very aware of the ways in which Black people are shown to be lesser than, even if you don't see it in their day-to-day life. Black kids are very aware of this reality. So like very practically, building up racial pride, showing Black history, showing the incredible things that Black people accomplish. And that's also important too, because we know that when individuals are suicidal, and especially with Black children, there's the inability to future project. And we see that this comes into a lot of that interpersonal conflict as well. So I'll use actually gun violence as an example of this. We know that youth in areas of high gun violence have high levels of difficulty seeing themselves in the future. They have very poor skills in envisioning themselves as adults, as like 50-year-olds, let's say. Building that skill in our youth is so important. getting them to dream big, getting them to just dream 10 years down the road is a skill that does wonders. When you are in high conflict areas, when you're in high violence, when you are dealing with suicidality, any of those things, it is very difficult to future project. And that makes them more willing to take risky behaviors in the present. So simply like conversations over dinner, where do you see yourselves in 50 years? You know, I'm thinking about retirement soon. I can't wait to retire. What would you do if you didn't have to work anymore, if you could retire? I want to be on a, I want to be in your house actually. And helping you raise your kids, right? Like make it fun, make it a conversation over dinner. And that's the other thing about conversations around suicide and when you're trying to figure out where your kid is, they don't all have to be the serious, intense conversations, right? They can be fun. They can be about the future. They can be what makes you feel good. What makes you feel happy? What makes you feel cared for? I noticed that you said the other day that, you know, your friend Sarah was unkind. Why do you like having friends like that? Do you like having friends like that? Why is she an important person in your life? Right? So I think to your point of, you know, what the research is saying, we know, so kind of summarizing, we know that racial identity, that's a huge, huge, huge driver of suicidality, but also resilience, right? Strong racial identity, strong perceptions of your race, your value of being Black, of the wonderful things that Black individuals do, your power as a Black person, is also a protective factor against suicidality. So when we can build that up, it's a super protective factor and it decreases suicidality. So building up that resiliency, building up that perception of Black identity and positive Black identity, positive Black role models is a huge thing, especially people who are kind of across the life cycle, right? So try and find somebody who you can say is like hashtag goals for your kid when they're in their college years. A person who's hashtag goals when they're as a young professional, somebody who's your age, who's not you as a mentor, somebody whose grandparents' age, who's not a grandparent, right? And it can be a historical figure. It can be somebody they will never meet. It could be somebody they have weekly coffees with. All of those things are really wonderful ways to increase their ability to future project and then also to build that kind of racial identity, build that strength and power in their identity as well. So those are two things that are coming out of the research. That we know are not only contributing to Black youth suicidality risk, but can, if we flip it, it can be a protective factor, which is the really exciting part that often is forgotten in research. So trying to build up those things can be a really great strategy to kind of attack some of those risk factors.
I love that. The protective factors and preventative measures, right? That's the
Exactly.
key. It's all communication and vulnerability and openness to listening, I think. So someone just asked in the chat, do you know of any national mental health task forces that can serve as resources for parents and community leaders?
So national task forces. So there's the Black Youth Suicide Coalition for that comes out of Congress. And they bring together a lot of research and do a lot of advocacy on the Hill. I would say they're SAMHSA. They also
I
have
was gonna say
the,
SAMHSA. They're
yeah, and
great.
they specifically have a Black Youth Suicide Prevention program. I will say, you know, with the current political climate, they're facing a lot of funding issues and potentials of being shut down. Wellness and Color, so that's the nonprofit I run that focuses on suicide prevention among Black women ages 18 to 35. We partner with them a lot and know that they are facing a lot of cuts and a lot of like our contracts with them have been cut. And you know, I say that to say advocate for yourself, go to your congresspeople, right? Say what's important to you, like fight for these programs because a lot of them are facing being shut down. There are a lot of nonprofits like Sunrise, like Wellness and Color that do this work. And it might not be a national coalition, but there are resources like that who can show up and give you the different tips and resources. And I think it's important just to know like what you need out of the organizations you engage with, right? So, like, for example, Sunrise doing these calls and this being a place of not only information getting but community building is a really important space. But if you're somebody who's looking more for hard resources or the advocacy components, right, going to a national coalition will be the road for you, maybe. So I think that almost building up your repertoire of resources and nonprofits that like speak to the needs you have and being willing to kind of switch and adjust is going to be maybe the strongest way, because there's not many like national task forces that bring together all of these groups.
And I just put a resource guide that I got from SAMHSA. I attended an event last summer with SAMHSA, an all 2-day workshop specifically around suicide in the Black community. So there's a great guide, resource guide that I just put the link to in the chat. And it's all about suicide prevention, intervention, and postvention. And it's an equity-focused review of resources. So it's got tremendous
Cute.
resources in addition to what Lexi shared. And Lexi is at such an incredibly young, fantastic age, really leading so much great work in this specific space as a suicidologist, which I'm just grateful for you because
Thank
we need
you.
all of this. You're incredible. But
Thank you.
yeah, so thank you for all of what you're doing and for sharing and wellness and color. And before we close, I just want to make sure if anybody wants to share anything, we have a few minutes left. Feel free or put any notes in the chat if you feel more comfortable doing that. But you're welcome to share. Lexi, feel free.
And
I see you getting ready to say something.
yeah, I was gonna say I'm gonna also drop our like newsletter sign up in the chat too. And definitely sign up. We send out a bi-weekly newsletter where we just talk about not only tips, resources, events. It doesn't spam your mailbox, but we are working on building our blog for people who have, young women in their lives, 18 to 35, who are looking to build community, looking to have kind of their mental health community, right? You have your gym buddies, you have your dinner buddies,
Yes.
you have your work friends. We want to have our mental health friends. Encourage them to engage in the community, to sign up for a group chat, to participate in the events. So you can
Absolutely.
sign up there, and then I'll also put our website on there so you guys can check that out too.
Awesome. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Really appreciate you being here. And I know you were here once before during National Suicide Prevention Month. So we'd love to have you back again at some point
Always.
in the future, and really want to support you and your endeavors. Really proud of you. Lexi and I, we grew up together on the same page. I shouldn't say together. She grew up with my children, but we lived on the same block many years ago. And so it's wonderful experiencing you and seeing you blossom into such a tremendous, tremendous young lady. So thank you for everything you're
Thank
doing.
you. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. And thank you for having me. And thank you all for being such a wonderful audience and asking great questions and engaging. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. You've been fantastic. And Dr. Vicki Johnson, my big sister and dear friend, she is on an airplane right now. She normally closes us out in prayer. I am going to do something a little different this morning. I get the daily word every day, and it's something that I read and meditate on in the morning. And today's daily prayer, I think, is really perfect for where I am mentally in the world and in my space. And it's about quietness. And for those who know me, know that I don't know how to say no. And I jam pack every moment of every day with way too much. And so this really spoke to me today, in addition to all of your fantastic words, Lexi. It's about quietness. It says, in quietness, I am refreshed and renewed. Sunday, March 16th, 2025. Sometimes, especially on my busiest days, I need to be quiet, to step away for a few moments and simply be. I begin by finding a comfortable place. I feel my body relax, my breathing become regular and easy, and the busy stream of my thoughts slow as I open my mind and heart to the divine presence within me. I affirm God is here. Relaxation deepens as I focus on the simple thought. God is here. Peace, love, wisdom, and understanding fill my awareness. In this timeless moment, there is no discord. There is no fear. There are no concerns. There is only God within and all around me. My heart's wisdom hears the words, I am with you always. Refreshed and renewed, I return to the activities of my day. My soul is at peace and my mind is clear. Inner harmony is restored. Be still and know that I am God. That's Psalm 46:10. So I want to leave everyone with that today. To take some time for ourselves, to be still, to be peaceful, and to open up a new space for communication with our loved ones and our children and ourselves as we forgive ourselves for things that we can't get back. We can have a new chance and a new day and a new possibility and a new relationship with our children starting today. So with that, have a beautiful week, everyone, and we'll be back next Sunday. Thank you.